We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging.
As I say, Brian, you and I are nearly there. We haven't got that long to go.
This is a very special episode of Australian True Crime. I don't think Emily and I have ever spoken so much about an interview. We just kept calling and texting each other about it because it was such a privilege and so moving to speak to Brian and Carmel Russell, whose 17-year-old daughter Natalie was the final victim of Paul Charles Denyer, also known as the Frankston serial killer.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
It's not just the terrible circumstances that brought us all together that makes this conversation so touching, but it's the fact that Brian and Carmel are reluctantly speaking to us because they need our help. All of our help. In a moment, you'll hear how hard it is for them to ask. And you'll hear how little they're asking for. We hope you'll join us and be as passionate as we are about helping them. We'll leave the details of the case for the other upload this week. It's an earlier episode in which Charlie Bazina, who was the lead homicide detective on the case, details the investigation. But we will let you know that Natalie's killer, Paul Charles Denyer, was originally sentenced to life without parole, but a non-parole period of 30 years was later set, making him eligible for release in 2023. We begin this episode by talking about our mutual friend, Charlie Bazina, and the other police who worked on the case.
He was great, Charlie. All the police, we've had nothing but admiration for them. I don't think they slept for weeks. You know, they'd come in and early in the morning, they'd be there at 6 and then they'd still be there around midnight, and then they'd come in with all this new information they'd gather. So.
Yeah. Was Charlie the sort of main contact for you?
He was, yeah. Mm. And even when Charlie wrote his book, The Job, he rang us to ensure that we were happy with what he put in. Yeah, pardon me, regarding Natalie's chapters in the book there, so which I thought was pretty decent, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely decent. I think that's something that most of us don't understand, is the relationship between families and detectives investigating, and that it is ongoing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, well, the district chief, John Mooney, he was still coming around years later, wasn't he, to
telling
make
us
sure
if
everything
was all right.
Something
occurred.
Something
I don't want you to read it in the paper. I want you to know by us first. They were absolutely marvellous, you know. Mm. We had policewoman sit with me all night, that night, and two policemen sitting outside in the freezing cold in their car, which I didn't know that because my mind then wasn't thinking about that, but whenever we hear anyone say something about the police, we always stick up for them because they just couldn't have been absolutely perfect, weren't they?
Yeah, well, even I think it was over a week afterwards, we still had the two policemen outside and they didn't let anyone in unless they checked with us. Mm. And then once again, John Mooney, the trump, he rang up and he said, "Do you mind if I shift them?" He said, "If you're not happy, you can keep them there a bit longer." I said, "Oh, you know, I'm sure they've got other things to do." But that was just their attitude, you know. It was so good. Mm.
That's such a good point you raised too about reading things in the paper. I never thought of that, of course. So
it frightened us many times. We'd pick up the paper. Even now, you know, people say, "Oh, he won't get out, he won't get out." But Brian gets the paper every morning and you always open it and you think, because you hear so many stories, oh, he won't get out, and next minute they've got out. You know, and it's always that in our everyday that has he pulled another stunt, which he's pulled that many stunts while he's been in jail. and thinking, oh, he's going to have some prison, he's been so good and this and that. And so, you know, it's always there, you know, it's always a worry that you go to read something. But where we have been lucky, as Brian said, the police, they often come around, but we have had a few forgot to tell us, especially when he was wanting to change, be his sex, wasn't it?
Yeah, sex change operation.
Sex change operation. And we go, what? What's this? You know, it's really just turned your stomach, you know, you just freeze for a few minutes. Yes, it's always, you know, something there, so it's very frightening at times. But we've kind of learned to live with it, which we've had to with the other children, and they're half wrecked, so, you know, they keep saying, Mum, are you all right? You all right? And, yes, and, you know, you have to be strong for them too, otherwise, as I say, Brian, you and I are nearly there. We haven't got that long to go, we don't think, anyway. And, so... that's so. I've just little things have happened over the past few years. Brian got cancer, and he couldn't work, and I wasn't that well. I had to look after him, and so we had to sell our house. And of course, then we were renting it, and the person who we're renting it from wants to sell it now. So we're just kind of in a state that we didn't ever think we'd ever be in this situation. It's not very nice. But.
And, you know, everything you've gone through, and people, I think, feel, who remember what happened, feel a real connection, I think, to knowing that you'd be okay and you'll be okay. So I think this is why we really want to get people out there helping. And
I don't know. Hey, listen, I don't want you to feel any feelings of... having made any mistakes or anything like that, Carmel. Mm-hmm. You know, my mum and dad lived in a granny flat in my backyard. My dad passed away a couple of months ago. Mum's still back there. And that's just because they had a taxi license. That was their business, and that was their whole savings and their superannuation and everything. And, of course, we all know what's happened to taxi licenses. Mm-hmm. Arse has fallen out of them, Carmel. So, yeah, I mean, it happens, that's life, you know?
It's always, my mother always said, you must own a roof over your head.
Oh,
otherwise,
no.
When you get older, and you'll be thrown out on the streets. So I always told my kids, you've got to get a house.
So hard, though.
That's it. My mum's the same way, Carmel.
So hard to be. Yeah. Houses are so expensive, and, you know, there's so much talk about affordable housing, and, you know, you think you're going to be able to do it, and you know, things happen, like sickness happens, marriage breakdowns, all that, and that's what makes us all vulnerable to
basic stuff, let alone
life stuff,
what you guys have been through, and you know, kept going and stayed together.
Yes, well, that's what we have leaned on one another. It's we have been lucky in that, and I know a lot of marriages break up, but I think us having the other children too and seeing how unhappy they were, as I said, Brian, we've just got to be strong for them too. You don't think this will happen to you as you get in life, you know. Things happen and we can't undo them. The same to her with Natalie, you know. So it's not a day go by that we don't think of her, because she always was just a special child. And with Natalie, she just loved the family, you know. And we know whenever any do's and that on, she's always there. You just feel her around you, you know. She's shuffling around. Most of her friends, they all loved her, you know. She had a special gift that used to go into the bedroom and they'd be crying and come out all happy. Natalie would just say to me, oh, parents' problems, Mum, but they're all right now. Never tell me, you know, never ask. But, and that's why they always loved her, because that was the type of girl she was. She tried to help everybody, you know, and that's why I say she definitely was chosen up there. She was chosen because I believe she's up there now organising different things, and so many young ones these days are getting murdered. And she's there to, you know, some of the parents, I've got sisters and brothers up there, and I've got my parents, Brian's parents, but a lot of people don't have anyone up there. So I've said to a few people, don't worry, because if you've got you've got cousins and somebody's up there waiting for you to greet you. But I said, we've got Natalie, you know, we've got all the rest of them. That's one thing we're looking forward to.
I know we chatted about this outside a little bit, but I hope you don't mind if I bring it up, because you've got a GoFundMe that has been started for you. And as I said to you, having worked with another group of people on one of these before, I promise you, I understand how hard it is to allow people to give you money.
Yes, well, when my daughter came to us and said, could we do this? And Brian, I looked at her and I said, no, how embarrassing, you know. Mm-hmm. We speak to Neil because we're very close with Neil. We've had a lot to do with Neil. He's always been number one to us. He's a fantastic person. Mm-hmm. And I said, we said, no, you know. And then when we got told, we've got, it's gone a month now, we had four months notice, what are we going to do? We can pay rent, but we've got to have the shift our furniture and a big bond, and that's so. Well, we have to undo ourselves and just say yes. We'll go for it.
Yeah. So you need some extra cash to move, and so your daughter and some people said, why don't we try this crowdfunding thing? So Neil Mitchell's going to publicise it for you. Is publicising it? When I was part of one of these for another group of people, and they were victims of sexual assault by clergy in Ballarat. Lots of people donated, and what they all said was, thank you for giving us an opportunity to show we care. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys will find that a lot, that people will be so grateful to have a way to show you that they care for you and to have a way to sort of wrap their arms around you, because it's so hard to find a way to do that for the community sometimes. And here's a way. Here's a way with $5, $10, just a way to acknowledge you and support you. So you mustn't feel bad about it.
And Vicky Petratus, who brought you in today.
She's been absolutely marvellous. Well, we wouldn't be here really without Vicky, you know. We wouldn't be here without her. She's been absolutely fantastic. Is she around now?
She's right there.
I won't say any more.
Yeah.
Well, Vicky's a big friend of our podcast, and her book about the Frankston murders, it's a definitive account of it, and she's had a lot to do with families. I know that when Debbie Freem's son, Baby Jake, we all know him as, Baby Jake came down to Melbourne last year, and Vicky's had a lot to do with trying to help Jake, you know. He hasn't had a easy time, and I think people are really, really want to know how do families go through this, and you and Brian seem so tight and so together, and obviously you've got the other kids, but what's kept you going?
Everyone looks at me.
Yeah, why do we do that? Why do we look at Dad?
Well, I don't know what's really kept us going. I think it is just keeping the family together, and they've had problems too.
How many other kids do you have?
Five.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it was six all told. It was a bit of a Brady bunch.
Yeah.
I had two, and Carmel had two when we met.
And then you had two more.
And we had two together, so Natalie was the second youngest.
Natalie was Brian's and mine, and Damien, he's a younger.
Yeah, so they've had their problems, and as all families do. But
but it's a lot to ask.
Yeah, that's right. And this murder, of course, losing Natalie, I mean, that had a disastrous effect on all the kids. So I suppose that's what we felt our job was, to stick together and try and help them. And, of course, in doing that, we're probably helping ourselves too, to come to terms with it or get through life, which can be difficult. But, and it's thrown up a few other challenges, as Carmel says, my cancer, etc. The surgeons, I remember, in the hospital after the operation, I was a bit of a fitness fanatic all my life, and I said, why would I get bowel cancer? You know, where diet's good, and we went through a few things, and the surgeon said, have you had any major traumas in the last few years? And I said, well, if you count the murder of our youngest daughter. He said that would be enough to kickstart a cancer like yours. It's just sort of gone on. There's been one thing after another. I've had both knees replaced, and on the 25th anniversary of Natalie's murder, we had a get together, and a lot of people turned up at Nat's track, and they were all telling me how crook I looked.
Looked terrible. He was terrible too.
I went home and collapsed, and went into hospital. There were quite a few things wrong with me. They worked out it was eventually the gallbladder had to be removed. So that was, just another little thing. When I say a little thing, it's after it's finished, it's a little thing, but at the time it wasn't a little thing. So.
No. Feels like an arrow through the heart, doesn't it, every one of them? Yeah.
You get that, and then Karma went in to have a small growth removed from her ankle, and of course, being very thorough as they are in the Frankston Hospital, they found out she had a crook heart and fluid on the lungs, and her liver wasn't 100%. So
I was about to have a stroke. They told me,
Harmel.
Yeah. So we've been sort of working through all those things. Yeah,
silly little tiny little thing on my leg, and in the end, I thought, I'll ask the doctor. He said, wish you had have told me when it was small. I'll have to send you off to a specialist. I go to the specialist. They put me in the hospital to get it out. And then they do all this. So I said, a very small pulse. I said, sometimes the doctor can't find it. And I say to him, I'm here. And he said, and I said, so I told the anaesthetist that, don't worry. So when I come out, he says, your heart's very slow. So I said, no, I said my pulse. He said, I'm telling you, your heart. He said, you had blood clots there and you were just on the verge of a stroke. So next minute, did you do all these things all over me? And I said, well, silly little leg, you probably could help me save my life. But then sometimes I wonder, do I want to be saved?
After the break, Carmel and Brian talk about what keeps them going. You can help them keep going by contributing to the GoFundMe campaign. Just go to gofundme.com/keeptherussellsinfrankston. That's one word, keep the Russells in Frankston. But you don't have to remember it, because we have the link in the show notes and on all of our social media pages. We've also made a contribution on behalf of our patrons, and thank you to everyone who chooses to support us in that way. We hope you're happy with us paying it forward in this way. Coming up on Australian True Crime, you'll hear a lot of talk about a man named Neil. For those of you outside of Melbourne, you need to know that Neil is Neil Mitchell, a top-rating talkback radio host. He's on weekday mornings, and he's been awarded an Order of Australia for his work for charities and for people like Brian and Carmel. If anyone can help them get a nice house and keep Denya where he belongs, it's Neil Mitchell. And we're happy to do whatever we can to support his efforts on both fronts. We pick the conversation up, though, with Carmel being brutally honest about the fact that she sometimes struggles with the idea that she's lucky to be alive. Like recently, after a trip to the doctors with a sore leg.
I said, well, silly little leg, you probably could probably help me save my life, but then sometimes I wonder, do I want to be saved? But then I think, I still feel pretty fit at times, and, for the kids to be around a bit longer. And these days we are all living longer, aren't we?
We are. That's true. Mm-hmm. And, why not? I mean, just why not, Carmel? You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You might go tomorrow somewhere and just have a bloody great lunch somewhere. You might have just something so nice happen tomorrow somewhere that makes you think, oh, well, there you go. I'm glad I was here today.
Yeah, well, that's true too. My brother had a heart attack on his 50th birthday. And Bernadette, they were twins, and she had bowel cancer, and she passed away on her 54th birthday. So those two are younger. I've got an older sister and another sister, and then me. There was five of us, and Margaret, the older sister, she'll be 18 next month. And she says, oh, we're so lucky to be here, aren't we? We're just so lucky. And I think, I don't know, are we? But, you know, and I think, well, I suppose we are lucky. Mm. We've got two doggies. They're our babies now. All our babies are growing up. How things happen in life. And one of our, we only have two grandchildren out of six children.
So far,
yeah. Well, my son, I think, will have a couple, but they're married, but she's young and they're doing quite good and buying a house. But we had one commit suicide. He was 17.
A grandchild?
Same age as Natalie.
Wow. Same age, but how many years after Natalie?
10 years.
About 10 years after Natalie, and that was another traumatic thing to happen.
That is.
You know, we always, it's very hard to say. We think he might have been bullied at school, and he actually was only about 4 or 5 when Natalie was taken, and he was sitting watching the TV, and of course on the news those days it was everything. Oh, he started crying. He's, Mum, it's Natalie on the TV, you know. So that's how he found out. So I always reckon that caused him a little bit, because whenever he came over, she'd have him outside pushing him around in the pram, and you know. That was, so I don't know, we seemed to have learned. I don't know if you say learned, but we just have to accept things that have happened. You know, what do we do? You know, as I said, a couple of times we've been in the car, and Brian goes, oh, right on the water. And he goes, how'd you be put my foot right down? And we go straight in. And I said, yes, that would be all right for us, but what about the others? I said, you can't do that. You know, it wouldn't be like to do it sometimes, but it wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, that was very powerful when you said right at the beginning of our conversation, when you looked at each other in the eye, and Carmel, you said, we've nearly made it. It's nearly over.
Yes.
It's been a hard one for you guys. It's been a hard one.
Yes, but we, I don't know, I suppose we haven't really felt pity on each other or you know. We know we've lost. It's been a terrible loss. I'm a bit different to Brian sometimes. I think, well, I don't know why we were selected, but she was selected, Natalie, because she was something special. And I think it was just amazing that now she's up there helping all these other people. And of course, I'm a bit on the spiritual side, which a lady said to me, she's very good, she said to me, Natalie couldn't accept it when she first went up there, because she'd met a boy, she'd been going for a little while, she told everyone he is her boyfriend, like the others were just nothing, but she's really keen on this fella. And she said that was her boyfriend. I go a bit off the track sometimes.
That's okay. It's your track. We're following you.
So she, as I say, she was a little bit special. And when she was with her boyfriend the last Friday, and then the next Friday where she was taken, well, that Friday she was sitting at his place, and he said she just burst out crying. Well, Nellie only cried when the girls went to Sydney to live, or we had to have her dog put down, or just something really, and she cried. And I said to David, I said, why? He said, I asked her. He said, she didn't know. And I said to one of her friends, she said, yeah, she told me. You know, the worst thing she felt, she wasn't going to be there anymore. You know, I always think that she had some feeling that was going to be her last, because she was one of these who didn't cry for nothing, you know. And as I say, this spiritual lady said a couple of times that she couldn't accept it when she went first up there. She wasn't very happy at all, you know, because she missed David, she missed her family, but said now she's settled. And the next time I went, she said Brian wasn't very well. Well, I'm not laughing at that, but it was just his look, you know, feeling really sorry and really. And I came home and she said, now Natalie said she doesn't want her father father up here at the moment. She's got enough to do now. So I come home and I go, don't you even think you're going up there yet. So I'll get about it, I said, because Natalie's got too much to do up there now. Yeah. So yeah, we had laughs, and I always, you know, and I think talking about her has always helped too, you know.
Mm.
I was telling Vicky, one of Brian's friends, a policeman, and he said, how the heck can you get over this? He said, I've just lost my son, he's 30, and he just died in his sleep. And Brian said, oh, you know, it does get hard and blah, blah, blah. And I said, Brian, just go easy. And Brian, I said to the fella, it does take time, but I said, talk about it, talk, you know, and say to the other kids, you know, like second marriage with him, and his wife wasn't very happy. He said, not coping too well. I said, it will ease down on you, but I said, talk, say to the kids, I remember Uncle such and such did this, and I said, you know, talk about him. And I said, then the other thing is, we were lucky. I said, we're not lucky, but I said, you were lucky you had him until he's 30. You saw him as a man. I said, we were lucky that we had Natalie for 17. At least we've seen her grow into a woman.
Yeah.
So you look at it always, and as I say, talk about. And
when you see the appeal for the children's hospital, I mean, some of those people have got kids in hospital. We never have to go through all that with us. It was more traumatic, but you know, I mean, a bit stupid saying you're trying to think of positives or the bright side, but you've got to do something like that. Otherwise, you'd just go totally mad, I think.
Mm.
And so, as Carmel says, we had her for 18 years, or nearly 18 years.
Mm.
18 great years, you know. Mm.
Yeah, you're very present when you talk about her. It's like it was very recent. It doesn't feel like it was a long time ago when you speak about her.
It wasn't just yesterday.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, she's, as I say, she's always around for us, and because she got very close with Brian, because she started to work with Brian at Brakes Plus. He had a place, and Brian used to say to her, you know, what did you used to say to her? You used to threaten her that she's going to...
Oh, yeah, I used to threaten her. I would say, you better hit those books and get that get that HSC, otherwise this might become your full-time job as a mechanic.
Yeah.
And she said, that wouldn't be too bad.
No. See, she loved it because all the fellas come in and, hello, Natalie. And all. She was just at that age, you know, the boys, and got her learners permanent. And to Brian said he'd come home shaking like this from all the way home on the freeway. She'd be driving, and he never lets me forget. She said, Mum, can I drive home? And it was from...
Hastings, was it?
No, from where you worked.
Oh,
Moorabbin. To Frankston.
Oh, God.
And it was pouring with rain, the wind. I said, no, you can't drive in that lane, not because it's too windy. Well, he carried on to me. You would let her drive. It was so windy.
I know. I've got twins. I've got to do 300 hours or something.
I scraped the side of my mum's car. The first time my dad took me out, we were in a car park, and I panicked, and I scraped the side of her car on like a pole.
Oh gosh!
And he just came home and went,
"Yeah, what do you do? I suppose you got to, haven't you?
Yeah.
Got to be prepared for all that."
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the next one, Damien, he never asked. He just go pick up the keys. You coming? He'd just be, and I was like, oh. So I thought, I better do this, because Brian was mainly at work, and I was there to chauffeur him around.
Yeah.
But
there seems to be a more relaxed relationship when the parents are a bit older, don't you think?
That's what Damien had said, because I always felt I had Lisa when I was only 20, and when I had Damien, I was 36 or so.
Do you think you were stricter with Lisa when you were younger?
Well, I said to him once, you know, sometimes Damien, I feel a bit, because, you know, we're a lot older than that. Oh, well, he said, I think I rather like it, because he said, you're more mature. And, you know, because other kids would say, Mum, can we? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, oh, all right, because I've been through it all.
Yeah.
But he used to say, yes, I like it.
So it doesn't surprise me that Natalie liked working with you. You were probably relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, like mates. Right.
It was really. Yeah, I used to quite look forward to it.
Saturday morning.
She didn't. She did. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't
really she loved
hard
it.
Work.
Yeah.
She used to have a driving lesson. That was the first thing when we got there at 8 o'clock. That was still 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Then it was time for the boys to have their morning tea. So do you want me to go down to the shop and get it there?
Oh, great.
She'd disappear for a while.
Down to the shop.
and then come back.
It's
nearly time to go home.
Carmel says there are different apprentices and young blokes around the place and wander in. Hi, Natalie.
That sounds like a top job.
So she thought, oh, that would be all right.
And then on the way home, there was always, I've just seen a pair of jeans I'd like to have. Dad, can we pop in and get those? And can you advance me a few dollars?
Yeah. Spent next week's pay by the time she gets home.
It was an enjoyable Saturday morning.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? You know, just such a normal, you know, daggy family. And then before you know it, you're thrust into this terrible club and you're talking to Neil Mitchell and you've got police in your life and you've got people writing books about your family and, you know.
And although I think one of the main, not main things, but one of the things was when after Natalie, I don't know how long it was, and police came to the door and I thought, oh, Damien wasn't home. Oh, no, what's happened now? He said, no, can I come in? I go, yes. So he said, the children at the school would like to know, they want to have, they feel unsafe up the track. So he said, we were thinking that we'd make the track out of Natalie's name. What do you think of that? And I said, oh, well, I'd agree with that. And he said, what would you like to call it? And I said, well, Brian, as he said, he's always a runner, and Brian stuff. And so I was running up Nat's track, and I said, what about we call it Nat's track? Because Brian would come home and say he was running, and he said, we'd get back to the kids, and everyone said, yeah, that would be lovely, you know. So so it's in the Melways books too. It's called
Nat's track.
Yep.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's been amazing, really. And, like, even her funeral, there was over 1,000 people there, and we had police saluting to her in her whole garden. I'm saying to Natalie, because I wanted her buried with my parents, and I didn't want friends, because half my people are buried in the Cheltenham Cemetery. So I said, well, and we even had her...
Police escort, motorcycle escort.
Out to the cemetery. I'd say, Natalie, you're getting more than what the King and Queen get. I don't know what the driver must have thought, because I'm, you know, you're in such a state that, you know, but I was just so happy that everything. And I said, all these people, because it was only the week before was my birthday and I got quite a lot of flowers. And Natalie said to me, what do you want this place to look like, Mum? You want it to look like a nursery. And honestly, the next week, the whole room and the school was full of flowers. I've still got books and books of thousands of people who we didn't know have written little stories. And I think, I just can't believe it. I say to Brian, you and I, you know, I'm nothing. Brian's quite clever, but I... But, you know, I just think...
Well, I must have been married to you.
Well, that's right. There you go.
Sweet. See, I've learned over the
years. Yeah, you're very good. You are very clever. Yes.
Like they say, yes, dear, no, dear.
That's it. Yeah. Well, speaking of books, I mean, you know, as we just said, Vicky Petratus is here. You had a book, you know, written about the case in which you, you are a big part of the book. What made you agree to, you know, speak to an author when someone came to you and said, I'm writing a book? Can I talk to you? What made you say yes to that?
I think it turned out
that she's a lovely person, but you didn't know that.
No, but I think it was Bernadette who helped an awful lot there, because I didn't know much about all this, you know, and we were still up to it and not. And Bernadette said, you know, there's a Vicky, I don't know how she got to know you, but she was speaking to you and she said she wants to write a book. And I thought, well, that would be nice, let people hear the story about her life, you know.
Okay.
And so Brian and I were all for it. And that book, Frankston, there was people had their names down at the library for nearly 12 months, some of them. that book sold like anything, and there were still people waiting, and still, I don't know how many of you ever got to know how many were sold. But
so you've just got a natural trusting instinct. Did it never occurred to you that you wouldn't like it, or that it would be?
No, well, she spent a lot of time with us. She'd come over, okay. And we'd spend talking, and we'd just, Vicky, you'd spend hours with us, you know, talking.
Even when we were approached, it was more to get our side of the story too.
Okay.
Because we had a lot of people said to us, you know, the copper should have been onto this bloke.
Okay.
If they'd done their job, your daughter would still be alive. And we wanted to say, they did their job.
Interesting.
We could not argue about that and various things like that. We just wanted to get our side of the story across. That, you know, we loved Natalie. She was... greatly missed,
and of course,
and we were very happy. But
and we've spoken at length with Charlie Bazina about the investigation and about the door knocking and the depth of the investigation, and so it doesn't seem like there's much else that could have been done. Mind you, also there was the lucky break with the post lady, right?
Yeah. Of course, the thing was that. This yellow car was, they knew something was, the post lady saw the yellow car, but the two police came to have a look at the car, and as they're looking at it, they get a phone call to say, it's an urgent something or other, so they took off. So that was the sad part, because otherwise, and that gave him time to get out, because he could see the police car, so you could get out either way, so he could go one that way or that way, you know, this is on the track. So evidently he saw they'd gone, so he took off.
But, I'm so sorry, you know that.
But like, it wasn't the police's fault.
But I just feel like I hate you knowing the inner workings of Paul Denyer's mind. I really do, Carmel. It's just like you shouldn't know what a piece of filth like that was thinking about anything. Well, makes me sick.
But what did worry me is... I say to Brian, you know, Natalie's very strong. Brian said, yeah, but have a look at him. Mm. And, of course, he's half the size he is now, and he's got long hair for a ponytail or something, because he wants to walk out of there and no one would know him.
Yeah.
Because I know in Vicky's book, I don't know how much, but I remember reading, I left out some parts, but I remember reading... saying that Daniel looked at Natalie and said, you've got the same colour eyes as me. And then he was starting to put makeup and things, and I thought, you want to walk out. But so many of our friends, people, Damien's mates, we'll be waiting for him.
Which, naturally, we don't want to see
we
that
We don't
happen.
Want that, no, we don't.
I think people, like so many Victorians... feel so strongly about, and who can remember at the time about, you know, Denyer ever getting the possibility of parole. And I think that certainly the Premier might have something to say about that, you'd hope.
I anticipate they'll write legislation next year to ensure that he stays in prison.
Well Neil checked, didn't he?
I would think so.
That's one reason that sort Neil of kept us going.
Yes.
What did Neil say? He went through all...
Oh, yeah, he spoke to David Galbelly. He said it'd be most unlikely that any parole board would be game to let him out in the current...
I would think any Premier who wanted re-election would do everything he could do to make sure that didn't happen as well.
He only got 30 years for three girls.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an insult, really.
Well, I mean, these days it's actually quite good. To be honest, you know what I mean? Boris Rzhdeski got 6 years for killing his missus.
No,
I mean,
it's terrible.
Hey, what do you want to do in your new house? Is there anything in particular? Let's think about something. Is there anything nice that you would like in your new house? Is there a dream thing?
We love a garden.
Yeah?
We love our garden. Brian loves his veggie. He's got a big veggie patch.
You like veggie patches?
Yep.
Oh, he loves
it. Do you like raised veggie beds so you don't have to bend down or anything?
Yes, that's become very, must have, sure.
Oi, I've got three of them. I have three of them that my dad had in my front garden, and they've just gone to seed because no one else in my house knows what to do with them. So could I give them to you, please? I'll get someone to bring them to your house and set them up?
they'd be greatly appreciated.
Wonderful, because I didn't know what to do with them. Mm. Okay, so as soon as you get your house, we'll do that. I'll get them to yours and we'll get them seated up with whatever you want in them. So that's done. Nice. No dramas, man.
We've got a lovely rose garden. We like all our flowers. I'm one for the little flowers, and Brian loves his veggie sorted.
Mm. And you'd very much like to stay in the area, in the, the peninsula, Frankston area.
Near the hospital, the way things are going.
Yes. we've got two dogs, so and the other part is, you know, we really need fences that the doctor can
No worries.
Yep. And garage.
I've got a fantastic handyman as well called Maz. Yes, so I'll make sure we'll get it sorted, don't stress. Yeah. And what else? Anything inside? Like, do you need a new bed or anything?
No, bed's all right.
Yeah, I think we're right pretty comfortable, pretty happy with everything we've got.
Yeah, we don't, you know, it's just to get settled. It's just that first,
first part.
And you will have spoken to Neil by next week.
Definitely by the time this episode's up.
So I think with the groundswell of support, I really... And people, anyone who's listening who has... the ways and means to sort of, you know, get on to,
Neil will have it so sorted that anything we can do will be so just icing on the cake. GoFundMe.com/keeptherussellsinFrankston. We will definitely keep tabs on you. And please let us wrap our arms around you.
Yeah.
Please let us, because we just, as a city... We love you so much, and you're an inspiration to us. And, you know, this is an opportunity for the rest of Melbourne. So please let us take it.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to Vicky. She's taking the whole Saturday morning.
Thank you, Vicky Petratus, so much.
She is amazing.
Us know, because you would never have let us know. And thank you to your daughter. Was it your daughter whose idea this all was? Thank you to Neil Mitchell for everything he's done.
Pete's wife. That's the old.
Thank you,
Pete.
Yeah. Yes. I was so mad at her when she came and she told me, "Little bugger!" I said, "Just make sure that Neil doesn't hear this."
I'd said to Vicky, "You've got to get on to Neil. Get on to Neil."
Yeah, and I'm saying
Neil sets the news agenda.
And we've told Vicky. I said, "I'm so embarrassed."
Don't be silly now. What are the dogs called?
Harvey's. And Tommy.
Harvey and Tommy. Let's get Harvey and Tommy a nice house. Yeah. Nice warm house.
Yeah. Well,
it's bloody July shortly. It'll be, they'll be
freezing. They're sookie dogs. They are inside dogs.
Of course they are.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a dog outside.
Me neither. What sort of asshole would do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Sad.
But honestly, if I can give you those garden beds, that would be awesome. So we'll see how much room you've got. And I've got three. And however many you fit, I'd love to give you.
Thank you
bring
very
them around.
Much.
Oh, that'd be great, because every time I look at them, I think, GoFundMe.com/keeptherussellsinFrankston. That's where you can go if you would like to wrap your arms around beautiful Carmel and Brian. While you're at the computer or on your phone or wherever you're doing that, you can also go to our website, Australian True Crime Podcast, and buy the two excellent books written about this case by our friend Vicky Petratus. They are The Frankston Serial Killer, released in 2011, and The Update, The Frankston Murders, released in 2018.